You are listening to The Vitals, a monthly podcast for all things oncology nursing. For even more content, check out oncologynursingnews.com or find Oncology Nursing News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Hi, everyone. This is Lindsay Fisher, Associate Editor at Oncology Nursing News. For this episode, we spoke with Kristen Barber, a nurse practitioner at Huntsman Cancer Institute, about understanding the MAP kinase signaling pathway and some of the ongoing trials targeting MAP kinase pathway mutations in GI oncology. She discussed some of the ongoing phase 1 trials she's participating in and how she hopes the results of these trials could change patient outcomes following targeted treatment.
So kind of the premise behind this is that GI cancers in general have limited targeted therapies, and that with precision oncology and genomic sequencing, we're identifying more like driver mutations. We identify these by both liquid NGS and tumor tissue samples. But we know that the MAP kinase pathway is one of the most common mutational driver pathways in cancer, with the KRAS mutation being the most frequent mutated oncogene. So because we know KRAS is often displayed or mutated in a lot of GI malignancies, the incidence is actually about 90% of pancreatic cancers have a KRAS mutation. And then 50% of colon cancers have a KRAS mutation. 5 to 10% of upper GI patients have a KRAS mutation, and about 30% of cholangiocarcinomas have a KRAS mutation. So previously, this mutation has been undruggable, but this is now changing. It's exciting to see that we are finally approaching these targeted therapies. So I just wanted to highlight that the MAP kinase pathway, so this signaling pathway, really the way it works is you get external stimuli from growth factors outside of the cell, and then these growth factors will stimulate the signal through the nucleus, and then this signal is propagated downstream by phosphorylation and is responsible for cell survival and proliferation. So these genetic mutations that alter the functions of these protein kinases along these pathways is what leads to oncogenesis, promotion of cell migration, and metastases. So when we talk about the MAP kinase pathway, we say the RAS, RAF, MEK, and ERK are the protein kinases that are involved in this signaling pathway. So the RAS proteins, the one I talked about most commonly is the KRAS protein. Then we also have HRAS and NRAS, and these activate the proteins in the RAF pathway. So our RAF mutations, the family mutations there are like ARAF, BRAF, and CRAF. The most common one is the BRAF mutation that we're familiar with in both melanoma and then also in colorectal cancer. And then the RAF mutations will phosphorylate the MEK, so MEK1 and MEK2. And then the MEK proteins will activate ERK1 and ERK2. So in this pathway, we have also now some trials that we're excited about have SHP2 inhibitors. So these are a new class of drugs that are being evaluated both as monotherapy and then in combination with MEK inhibitors for GI cancers or cancers that have mutations in this MAP kinase pathway. So the SHP2 inhibitor is ubiquitously expressed in cells that regulate cells survival and proliferation, and then is activated in that RAS, RAF, MEK, and ERK pathway. So we found that in vivo and in vitro SHP2 inhibition has impaired the proliferation of the cancer cells, and this is what's kind of promising in our phase 1 clinical trials that we are anticipating, or we have enrolled patients on and are looking to do so. So I think the specific trials that we have are, we have two SHP2 inhibitor trials. One is called Navire, N-A-V-I-R-E, and the other one is called Jacobio. Jacobio has the SHP2 inhibitor in combination with the MEK inhibitor. And then also along this MAP kinase pathway, we also have phase 1 trials with the chemotherapy backbone of FOLFIRI added to the MEK inhibitor binimetinib, and that we are targeting patients who have already been resistant or progressed through FOLFIRI. And by adding the MEK inhibitor, we're hopeful that this is going to kind of combat some of the resistance pathways or mutations and prolong the efficacy of the FOLFIRI chemotherapy. And then the last two trials that we have some hydroxychloroquine mixed with like ERK inhibitors. We have a Utah trial and we have a THREAD trial with hydroxychloroquine and ERK inhibitor. And then I believe a MEK inhibitor and a hydroxychloroquine. So all of these trials, these phase one trials that we have really been targeting this MAP kinase pathway and these KRAS mutations.
So is that 5 different trials?
Yes. Yeah. So exactly. So 2 Utah THREAD, MEK FOLFIRI, we call it, and then Navir and JacoBio. So those are kind of our good handful of trials that we can use for these mutations.
Okay. And is eligibility similar across all 5 trials?
Yeah. So because they're phase one trials, and that's a lot of what we focus on in our institution and with the phase one director who I work with. So phase one trials are specific in their eligibility. So some of the most important things on a phase one trial, one is the patient's performance status. So these patients, their performance status and also their standard of care options. So we can only enroll in phase one trials if they've exhausted all standard of care options first. So we would never put them on a trial with an investigational drug if there was something that we knew would be efficacious for them. Then they need to have a good performance status. So an ECOG of 0 to 2, essentially meaning that they have to be up and out of their bed more than 50% of the time, is usually a criteria for these trials. We also look at their organ function. So making sure that they have adequate hematological function with an ANC greater than usually 1500, hemoglobin greater than 9, and a platelet count greater than 100,000. We also need to see a GFR usually greater than 60. And for a liver function test, usually nothing more than a grade 2 liver dysfunction with like AST and ALT greater than 2.5 times the upper limit of normal. Unless they have liver metastases, then we can usually go up to 5 times the upper limit of normal. In addition to those, usually patients can't be pregnant. They need to have no recent like serious cardiac events with like a recent MI or a stroke within 6 months. They usually have to have a treatment-free interval of 3 to 4 weeks from their last chemotherapy or radiation. They have to have no evidence of heart failure or New York Heart Association class 2 or higher is in exclusion to these trials typically. And then the other thing that I think is important with these trials is that we always go over in our visits the study calendar with patients. So we need to make sure that the expectations that they'll be able to come to each one of their visits, these patients are there for a long time. So they'll have PK and PD lab draws for sometimes 4, 6, 8, 12 hours after their treatment is administered. So really being clear about the expectation for the time commitment that it requires to be in these trials is also something that we go over clearly before we enroll anybody.
And what are some of the challenges that led to the inception of these trials?
Yeah. So I think the biggest challenge that led to these trials is, again, this pathway, these KRAS mutations and these MAP kinase mutations really have been known to exist in multiple cancer types, but obviously in colorectal and pancreatic cancer quite a bit, and not having adequate targets. So by not being able to target KRAS, really what triggered this is trying to find different drugs in that pathway. So adding a MEK inhibitor, adding a BRAF inhibitor, and then when you do so, trying to overcome the resistance. So one of the things that we experienced is with our BRAF positive colorectal cancer patients, we took the BRAF inhibitors for melanoma and we gave them to the colorectal cancer patients. But then we found that the resistant mechanism was to trigger and to stimulate the EGFR pathway. So we can give as much BRAF inhibition as we want to, but if we don't give the EGFR inhibitor in addition to the BRAF inhibitor, then the cancer cells will proliferate, metastasize, grow based on the EGFR activation. So finding the nuances between this pathway, getting longer durations of response, and then overcoming resistance has really driven kind of the trials in this clinical context.
In regards to the agents involved in these trials, are there any adverse events or safety signals you're anticipating, and how might those be managed?
Yeah, so with our SHP2 inhibitors, the patients that we've had on trials so far, only a handful, but we have seen the GI side effects. Diarrhea has been present, nausea, vomiting has been present, and then cytopenia. So we've seen anemia, thrombocytopenia, and neutropenia with this class of medications. With the MEK inhibitors, which we use in like the MEK FOLFIRI, we see traditional MEK inhibitor side effects. So those most commonly are rash or dermatitis, along with ocular toxicities with retinal vein, either occlusion or fluid behind the eye. So they have retinal vein, like an ophthalmitis. The other one was with the MEK inhibitors is GI side effects and diarrhea. It's easy to identify and it's actually easy to intervene. So a lot of these toxicities, you can hold the medication and then restart it and they can tolerate the same dose, or we'll do one dose level reduction and patients usually degrade at that point.
Is there any preliminary data that you've seen thus far that you're excited about?
Yeah, so not in our SHP2 inhibitors and our ERK inhibitors, but in our MEK FOLFIRI trial, we have had that trial for a couple of years now, and we have definitely seen the addition of the MEK inhibitor to FOLFIRI in some patients have a continued effect. So these patients who have progressed on FOLFIRI and then we put them on the MEK FOLFIRI combination, they have overcome some of the resistance and stabilized their disease for some time before requiring an next line of therapy. So I think that's probably the longest trial we've had open and we've seen some success.
That's awesome. If any of these trials prove to ultimately have positive results, how do you think this could change the treatment paradigm for this patient population?
I think colon cancer and GI cancers in general are evolving quite a bit with these mutations and these pathways. When I think about where we've come just the last couple of years, we have seen these. So for years, we've had RAS wild type and RAS mutated colorectal cancer. So we've been treating the wild type with the EGFR inhibitors. And then we've had the introduction of HER2 therapy, which we've seen trastuzumab and trastuzumab deruxtecan that we can use for this. We now have the BRAF inhibitors, so we can use the encorafenib and cetuximab, or encorafenib and panitumumab. We also have NTRK fusions that are targetable, and this KRAS G12C that's targetable. So I anticipate that that where we're going is really identifying these driver mutations, really targeting these. Unfortunately, none of these are going to be a cure for our GI cancers, but they certainly are typically well tolerated and give us longer control over the disease. I think the last point I would leave us on is with these different driver mutations that we're identifying, another way we're utilizing this clinically is what we see is we have a RAS wild type colon cancer, and these patients traditionally will give cetuximab to in addition to chemotherapy. So we're now kind of watching for and repeating the genetics on these tumors, looking for these resistance mutations. So what can happen is you'll be treating with an EGFR antibody in these patients. Eventually they'll have progressive disease. You will take them off the EGFR antibody because usually at this point, if you check, and we kind of are recommending or starting to check now at progression. So if you checked their NGS or their liquid biopsy or their circular tumor DNA at this point, you would find that these patients have developed a KRAS mutation. So they're no longer wild type or responsive to the EGFR antibodies. So then in this situation, then you would go back to a chemotherapy backbone without the monoclonal antibody. And hopefully you get some period of time, months to maybe years. And then at the time of progression, repeating another liquid biopsy, cell-free DNA, and looking for which clones are progressing. You will oftentimes find that the progressing clones after the chemotherapy will be these wild-type KRAS again. So then reintroducing the EGFR antibodies to really use these different therapies to target the clones when they when they progress, and then find out based on the pressure of the chemotherapy that was given, really what is driving the resistance or the progression. So I think using more circulating tumor DNA, following HER2s, KRASs, BRAFs, and finding and tailoring the treatment on and off depending on the resistance is kind of where we're going to go.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Vitals. Be sure to never miss a beat with oncology nursing news.